Yes, you're listening to the Burstbot Scottish Football Podcast with me, your host, Hamish Carton. We'll get on to the contents of today's show, which is a little bit of a bonus interview pod in just a minute. First of all, I just wanted to pass on our thanks from everyone at Burstbot for anyone who's so far downloaded and listened or reacted to our Scotland Euro 2008 review part one, which hit shelves on Saturday evening. We've been bowled over by the reaction. We really enjoyed recording it. And the good news for you, if you enjoyed listening to it, is that there's more of the same coming this Saturday as we round off the qualification campaign with part two of our podcast review. As I say, that should be recording Saturday morning and with you on Saturday evening. But if there's any change to that, we'll keep you updated on the various podcast channels, Twitter, Facebook, etc. Now, on to today's show. And it comes from an interesting article that I came across last week when I was just browsing through Twitter or various websites about something they're doing in Denmark. And it features around a match played between two of the biggest clubs in the country, Brøndby, who will be familiar to many Hibs fans, and Copenhagen, who will be familiar to a few teams, but most notably Celtics fans. For the game, obviously, earlier this year. But those two teams who are big rivals in Denmark, kind of like Celtic and Rangers, as you'll hear later on in this show, played together against each other about 2 weeks ago. And I was kind of blown away by the images I saw of the stadium full of fans, except not quite full, because supporters were socially distancing at the Brøndby Stadium. And the images are incredible. I'll probably stick them on the Twitter and Facebook for you to have a look at as well. But I wanted to hear more about this story and how Denmark was trying to get fans back into the games post-COVID-19. So I came across a fella called Johan Reiler, who is the supporters liaison officer at Brøndby. Came across an interview with him online and decided that he'd be a really good guest to have on the podcast just to find out exactly what they're doing in Denmark and how we could possibly learn from it in Scotland as we aim to get fans back to the game. So you'll hear a really good interview with Johan. It lasts about half an hour, where I find out all about the idea, what fans had to do, as well as the general reaction of football supporters in Denmark and also what Scotland could learn from that. I really enjoyed recording it and chatting to Johan, and hopefully you enjoy it listening. Now we'll get into the interview, and we start with Johan telling me about fourth placed Brøndby's season and where they currently fit into the overall Danish game.
Brøndby is one of the biggest clubs in Denmark with the most championships and so on. But for the past 10-15 years, we haven't won any championships. So we're like in good part of our history. So right now we are not the top, but sub top, if you can say that, part of the league, and we should be in top three every year. And this season haven't been very good, so it's not a disaster season, but it's below what we expect.
Yeah, FC Mechelen can become champions, I believe, on Thursday when they play Copenhagen, of course a team that Celtic fans will be familiar with in Scotland. Moving on to coronavirus, can you just give us a little bit of an outline as to how Denmark has been affected by this, and you know, in comparison to various other Scandinavian nations?
Yeah, sure. So so when the virus started to spread in Europe, I think Denmark was one of the first countries to have like a national lockdown, where we banned travel. Most people were forced to work from home. A lot of shops and so on closed. Also, football matches closed down. We never had a curfew as such, so we were allowed to go outside, but most of the things outside closed. And that helped us a lot. So already in the beginning of April, we started to see a decline in number of people in hospitals and so on. So actually, already from the beginning of April, we started to gradually open up the society again in different phases. So we are right now in a very, very good place. We have a very low number of people in hospitals. I think it's around 20 or 30. And yeah, compare. I think Norway is in the same situation as us, and then we have Sweden, who made another tactic, another strategy, and they are in a completely different place with still a lot of people in hospitals and a lot of people dying daily and so on. So I think Denmark and Norway and Scandinavia are in a quite good situation, and then Sweden are in not so good.
That's interesting. So football was obviously stopped at the peak of the virus, and then I take it when it returned in Denmark in the Superliga at first, was it with no fans? Were the games with no fans at all?
Yeah, I think we actually only had two playing days without fans before we actually started to have a small number of fans inside.
Very interesting. So I then believe that the Danish government then, as part of their lifting of restrictions, they then allowed up to 500 people at some matches. However, that included the players and included media staff and stewards and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. So it was because they allowed cinemas and so on to gather up to 500 people. If they had distance between people, and then football was like, we have big stadiums, we are outside. If cinemas can have 500 people, then we should have it too. So we were allowed pretty quick to have the 500 people, and then as you said, it was including everyone in the stadium, media, players, stewards, and so on. It was a bit strange, but most clubs were able to have between 200 and 300 fans in the stadium.
Right, and then this test case came around, and it was Brøndby versus Copenhagen. Now, first of all, give us an insight into that fixture, because from an onlooker in Scotland, that's two of the biggest clubs in Denmark historically playing against each other.
Yeah, so Brøndby against Copenhagen, that's by far the biggest game in Denmark. So that's like Rangers against Celtic. Mm-hmm. So it's a good comparison, and we actually use it a lot of times in Denmark, compare it to your derby. And some medias actually call it the new firm, because we call it the old firm.
Right.
It's like a media thing. It's just a media thing, but... So it's very comparable to your game. It's a match with always sold out stadiums and the two biggest and most passionate fan groups. And in Denmark, it's mostly the ultras culture that's dominated in the stands. So we have like active, we have standing sections in the end of the stadium with active support, with flags and pyrotechnics and stuff like that. And Copenhagen and Brøndby are by far the biggest fan groups in Denmark.
Right. So it seems like quite a big decision then to use this match as, a test case for getting fans back into football games.
Yeah, sure. But the politicians said, okay, we can do a test game, or they said we could do like a test case where they actually chose three different matches, and the most important thing was that each match was played on a different day, because it should be the same group who go to the stadium to evaluate how the clubs did. So they said, okay, one game on Saturday, one on Sunday, and then one on Monday. And then on Sunday, we were chosen because they would like to see how a passionate fan group reacted to the different restrictions and so on, because the two other games were clubs where the small clubs with small fan groups and no like active support and so on. So they wanted to see on the highest scale in Denmark how would football fans react to the restrictions. Why they chose this game.
So you found out that you would be part of, obviously, Brøndby versus Copenhagen, trying to get fans back into the game. How long did you have to prepare between finding out and the match taking place?
6 days.
Wow, that's not long, is it?
No. So we... told 9 days before the game that there would be a test case in that round where we played against Copenhagen, but they haven't chose which game they wanted to do yet. So we were like, okay, this is maybe gonna happen. But it was only on Monday, and we played the game on Sunday, so we had less than 6 days before we got the final confirmation that this is what we're gonna do before the match kicked off.
So what did you have to do in the 6 days between finding out and the game being played to, you know, make the stadium able to host fans?
It's a long, long list. I actually, with some of my colleagues, we made a list of all the things we had to do and put it on our Twitter account, just so the Brøndby fans could see this is how much we had to do before we could do this. So the rules were that we had to divide the stadium into sections of a maximum of 500 spectators. Because then they say, okay, if someone is infected at the game, or they will test positive in the days after the game, then you could only transmit the disease to a maximum of 500 other people. Not that it's going to infect all the 500 people, but if we have to test everyone, then it should only be in that section, because you have no physical contact with other parts of the stadium. So we had to section our stadium, had to do, you know, fences and so on, because normally we have like one section is like a whole stand, and you can move freely between the sections if you want to. So there's a lot of like blocking entrances and so on, and then everyone should sit with 2 meters distance. So that's you sit on one seat, then you have 3 seats that's empty, and then another one. Plus, every second row is completely empty. So we had to put stickers on all the seats where it said, okay, you can sit at this seat, and then everyone knew that if you're not allowed to sit on seats without any sticker on it, for example.
Wow. So you mentioned that there was 500 fans per section. What was the overall crowd at the Brøndby versus Copenhagen game, and how does that compare to the overall capacity of the Brøndby stadium?
So the capacity for the game was a little less than 3,000, and the normal capacity for a normal match, we have standing sections and so on, and just want to say that standing was not allowed. It's normally allowed, but it was not allowed for these games. So normally we have a capacity of around 28,000, and then 3,000 for this game.
So it was about a tenth of the usual capacity.
Yeah.
Right. That's interesting. That's with a 2 meter rule in place. Also, the fact that fans who were part of the same family, part of the same household, who travelled to the games together, couldn't sit next to each other.
No, they were not allowed to at this game. But I'm sure that's one of the rules, that because everything happened so fast, they just didn't think about that, because it's allowed. The new rules we are playing for, we have to follow now. Families are allowed to sit together, and also when we played with the 500 person rule, families were also allowed to sit together. So it was only in the test games they were not allowed to sit together. So there was a little bit of confusion about it, but I think it's only because things happened so fast, so they didn't think about everything. So
yeah, you mentioned the ultras section, you know, the standing section of Brøndby supporters, and you know, we've got the same here. Pretty much every major Scottish club has a section of ultras. You say that they weren't allowed to attend this test match. What was the reasoning behind that decision?
It was because the health authorities said that if you are making atmosphere and like, you're singing, you're shouting, then all the drops from the mouth and so on, they go further when you're shouting. So they actually said that they didn't say you're not allowed to yell at the stadium, but they said like constant singing and stuff like that shouldn't happen. People should like sit down, watch the game. Of course, you can react to the game and yell at the referee and so on, but it shouldn't be as usual where you have a stand where you have people singing for 90 minutes. And that's the reason we said that okay, if you're not allowed to sing and do active support, then the stand where you usually do active support it has to be closed. Otherwise, we have to have to discuss with people if they go to their old section and where they usually do this and usually do that, and then suddenly we come and say no, you can't do that anymore, and so on. It was just, and also out of respect of the work the fans do there every home match, then we wouldn't use it as a seating section.
Right. Okay. So I take it someone had to tell the Ultras group that they wouldn't be at this match. How did they take that news?
So I had the dialogue with them, and I just want to say that it was not because they as persons were not allowed. It was just a normal activity were not allowed. So they were at the game, many of them, but then we were just sitting around and drinking beer and enjoying the game for once. But they understood. They know that some of the things we're doing right now is just a part of the way to normalize things again. And we had to show the health authorities that we could, if they say you have to play the football game like this, we have to show them that we could actually do it. We needed them to trust us. So they understood that this is just one step in the right direction. But it's a necessary step, and also the club and the fans, and nobody thinks that this is a good solution, but it's just a step in the right direction. So if we have to take some of those steps to get it back to normal, then that's just how it is.
There's been a lot made in Scotland about the prospect of us getting fans back to some games in a limited capacity. And one of the big issues that has arisen has been how clubs would choose what fans could attend what matches. Because obviously, for example, Celtic and Rangers have, between 45,000 and 50,000 season ticket holders. So if only 10,000 could go to a game, how would they decide, what ones went to what? So how did Bronby decide what lucky 2,500 fans could go to the derby against Copenhagen?
So we said, of course, we said only season ticket holders, and we have around 11,000 season ticket holders. So only about one quarter of them were able to get a ticket for the game. For this match, we just set up an online ticket sale, and then we put a queue system on it, and then the queue system just randomly shuffle people in a queue, so it's like a lottery. So the people who gets the lowest queue number and gets into the ticket sale first, they can buy tickets, and then you could buy one ticket per season card. But if you had four season cards, you could buy four tickets. So people who usually sit and watch football together were able to do it again, because of course football is a social event and you are not interested in doing it alone. Then we had a principle to say that okay, so people who got a ticket for the derby, they are in the back of the line for the next game. So that's like a rotation as long as we have restrictions on the number.
Okay. And were away fans allowed at this match?
No. I think right now away fans it's one of the last things we will allow again in Danish football, because it just puts some different problems to the table, then you have to then you have to have the security set up around you when you have away fans. There's a problem with away fans traveling long distances. They're more drunk and so on, and they don't have the same responsibility to follow the rules. So if you only have the home fans, it's just a much simpler operation, and with all the restrictions you need to follow to play a game right now, it's just away fans, it's just a massive headache. So nobody wants it right now, and the fans are actually okay with it. Of course they miss it, but there's no people understand it.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that, you know, teams like Brøndby and Copenhagen will take big away supports to the various smaller teams in the Superliga. How are the smaller teams going to cope without having, you know, the money and the ticket sales from the bigger teams' away fans?
That's a good question, because we know that it's a good day for them when they play against especially Brøndby. Because we always have almost sold out away sections. That's not normal in Denmark. Mm. So of course that's a lot of money they don't get. But I think that's just another part of the problem with this virus. That okay, then they're gonna miss some entrance fees from Brøndby fans. But with all the other things happening, that's maybe not the top of their problems. They have other problems, also financial problems as well. So it's a good question, but I don't think it's. I haven't heard anyone mention it, actually.
My next question, were masks mandatory for fans to go to this game? Did they have to have masks on?
No, because actually we don't use masks in Denmark.
Really?
Yeah, our health authorities, they've been asked about it 100 times, and they're always like, yeah, we haven't actually seen any evidence that it actually works. So we don't wanna recommend anything that we don't have any evidence for actually works. So no, masks are not mandatory in any part of Denmark. So no, not at the match either. We said to our fans, if you want to have a mask on, you are allowed. Of course, you are not allowed normally because it's a security problem. But we said if you have a mask on because of the virus and so on, you are allowed to do that. But it's very, very rare you see masks in Denmark.
That's interesting. Didn't know that at all. Finally, just moving on to the actual match and how the event went, did the fans behave themselves? What was the general feeling coming away from the match?
So the match was a massive success. The fans really took responsibility. They did what we asked them to. They behaved how we asked them to do. Even though we actually scored an equalizer in the 89th minute, of course people cheered and so on, but people were respecting the rules. So it was a very good success, and I think people, they left the game feeling okay. This was a very strange experience. Of course it was, but also a positive experience because. It was just different because you had the people who usually stand in one end and singing, they were suddenly spread across the whole stadium. So sometimes they were singing sometimes, and it was actually very loud because it was from the whole stadium and the stadium was actually a bit empty. So, you know, it's always louder to sing in an empty stadium. So it was a very strange but very good experience. It was not as bad as people they feared it to be.
Right. So 2,500 people, you know, a tenth of the stadium, and the atmosphere was still really good.
Yeah. And several of our players talked to each other and said that, you know, sometimes it was difficult to know. It was only 2,500. It sounded like 15 or 20,000. So it was. I was really surprised too. You know, I've been in this for many years, and I also had sometimes the feeling like, okay, this is louder than it usually are when we have 15,000 at the stadium. So it was but it was still, it was very strange. And if you look at the pictures, you can see it. It looks very strange.
Yeah, it takes a bit of getting used to, doesn't it, looking at the pictures? Because for anyone who hasn't seen the images of the game, you effectively see the whole stadium decked out in yellow Brøndby shirts, but everyone is distanced. No one is too close to each other, and it's a really strange image, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think one of my co-workers compared it to like a 20-year-old football manager graphic or something, where the computer only puts one in every 8th, 10th seat or something, so it's easier for the computer to handle. It looked so fake. It looked very staged, and of course it was staged, but it didn't look real in some weird way.
Yeah. So that game happened a couple of weeks ago. What has happened in Denmark since that match?
So since then, we had the official evaluation from the government and the authorities, and the evaluation of all three games were very positive. So they made an evaluation and gave that to the politicians, and then the politicians, they had negotiations around what's going to happen now. So they made some new rules, so we are actually now allowed to put people with only 1 meter of distance. And to compare it to the other, as I said before, you sat in one seat and then you had three seats to the side and you had both the whole row in front of you and the back of you are empty. But now it's only one meter, then you only have one seat between the next guy and then you also have people on the next row. So we actually can use every second seat in the stadium now.
So you can get a 50% capacity?
Yeah, in theory, but then because we have these sections with only 500 people in it, and all sections need to have their own entrance, own place to buy food and drinks, own toilets and so on, and our stadium is not really built for that. So we have a game on Thursday, and we are able to have 8,000 in the stadium.
Right, so it's just a gradual upping of the attendance. You've gone from 3,000 to 8,000. You say that families can now sit together?
Yeah, and we have the dedicated family sections where they are allowed to move together if they want to.
Right. So what next for Brøndby after that? What more can you do to, you know, get the attendance up from 8,000 maybe to 10 or 12? Is there other things you can do?
Well, actually, right now they have negotiations because all of this is it's the politicians who decide what the rules are. And actually, we have a majority, not including our government party, but a majority in our parliament who wants to say that from next season, our next season starts in the end of August. The football clubs are allowed to let people in without restrictions. So actually, right now as I said, we have a majority who wants to decide that we lift the restrictions on the capacity from the end of August. But the government is not in on it, so there's a political fight about it right now, and we have to see how it pans out. But right now our focus is just to show that we have these new sets of rules. We can have 8,000 people in the stadium, show everyone that we can do that, and we have control of what's happening in the stadium, and just to show that they can trust us with as many people as they want, as they say the health authorities say is safe. But yeah, of course we of course affected by how the virus is affecting the society as a whole. So if the numbers are still good for the next 2 months, then we can get people back inside. If we have a second wave, then of course they're going to close down again.
Yeah, I think that's the key point, the fact that, you know, the football clubs in Denmark and Scotland and every other country are reliant on the virus being suppressed and you know, no second wave or no upsurge in the virus. No, that's really interesting to hear you speaking about the fact that, you know, full Danish stadia aren't too far away. I mean, you're talking about possibly the end of August. Our league season starts at the start of August, and we ended our league season after coronavirus. We've not had football in Scotland since March. So, you know, the chat is that we're going to start with no fans at all, and then, you know, possibly we'll have maybe 10% of the stadium full. But I suppose the Danish example shows that there's cause for optimism in Scotland, and that we could have full stadia back, or certainly, you know, half stadia at some stage in the next few months or so.
Yeah, sure. And as I said, it's been a crazy ride for the last 1-2 months. But we only had one home game with zero on the stands. Then the next home game, we had 225. Then the next game, we had 3,000. Then the next, that's on Thursday, we're going to have 8. So we increased our capacity for every home game we played since the league started again. So yeah, it just moves really, really fast. But as long as you show the authorities that you can actually handle it, because that's one of the things that we constantly tell the authorities, say we actually handle it better than so many other places, than the cinemas or the restaurants or the bars and so on, because we have you know, if you buy a ticket for the game, you have to say on when you buy the ticket, you have to fill in the form with your name, your email, and your phone number. So if anyone gets tested infected 2 days after, they call us and say, okay, I'm tested positive for Corona. Then we can take the list of all the people who are in the same section and give that to the health authorities, and then they can call everyone on the list and say, you need to get tested because you were close to one who got tested positive. And restaurants are not able to do that. Amusement parks and all the other things, they're not able to do that. So football is actually better equipped to fight the virus than most other places.
And it's also outside, isn't it, football, as opposed to, you know, restaurants, yeah, exactly, and cinemas, which are inside. So
exactly, and that's important. It's outside, and also football clubs are good at, you know, making sections and making sure people don't come in contact with each other. We do that all the time with home fans and away fans and different entrances and all those things. We're good at it because that's not what we normally do. So if we just take the tools we usually use and then use it to suppress the virus right now. So
okay, fascinating. Final question, and I'll put you on the spot, Johan. If you had one lesson from Denmark and what you've been through over the past few weeks, and you could pass it on to Scotland, what would it be?
I think it would be, don't sit around and wait for the politicians and the health authorities or authorities in general to give you the permission to get people inside the stadium. You need to make plans and as bulletproof as possible, and then push those plans forward and say, this is our plan. Show the world that you can handle it. Because then they are forced to either say your plan doesn't work or actually allow it, because we see other sectors in Denmark who didn't do this, and they're still sitting around with all restrictions. But football, we actually made the plans for how to get the fans back to the stadium, and then we pushed it to the politicians and, you know, all the ways you can influence the politicians. And of course, that's a big reason why it's gone so fast. And then, of course, get your fan groups, all fan organizations on board, make them a part of the plan. So, because that's eventually those fans who have to follow the restrictions. So make them responsible for the plan too.
So that was Johan Reiler, who is the supporters liaison officer at Bromby, speaking to me. A big thanks to Johan. Brilliant grasp of the English language, as you heard there, and also for giving up his time. I know he's quite a busy guy in the kind of role that he does at the club, and he had various meetings scheduled throughout the day, but he still was good enough to give me around half an hour to chat to. So really enjoyed doing the interview, and hopefully you enjoyed listening to it as well. If you did enjoy the show, please let us know on Twitter by searching for Busball Podcast, or we're on Facebook as well. Just search for the Busball Scottish Football Podcast. As I said at the start of the show, I really appreciate all the positive feedback that we've had from our Euro 2008 review show. Part one arrived on Saturday evening. If you've not yet listened to it, you can do that on our podcast feed. Just scroll down to the podcast below this one. And the good news is it will be back with part two, hopefully on Saturday night after we record earlier in the day. So look forward to that. And thanks very much for listening once again.